This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
I want to temper expectations that even if we do have a quiet revival, it probably is going to be a modest one compared to the first, second, and third fourth Great Awakening.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Daniel Galata, assistant professor at The Ohio State University, also author of the recent essay, Faith Makes a Quiet Comeback. We'll go in depth with Daniel about that later on in today's program. First, we're joined by Dr. Charles Steele. He is director of the Center for Commerce and Freedom, associate professor of economics, and Herman A. and Suzanne S. Detweiler chair in economics at Hillsdale College. Dr. Steele, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here, Scott.
Talking today about the idea, the concept of universal basic income, UBI, and there's a recent study on UBI, which we'll reference a little bit later on in our discussion. But to set the table, explain for us, what is universal basic income?
Universal basic income is the idea that the government would provide each person a certain amount of payment. Yeah, typically, you'd think a monthly payment, say $1,000 a month, but some sort of threshold that each person would receive, not means tested. That's UBI.
You've looked at it. You don't like it.
Not very much.
Understating a little bit. So let's walk through this a little bit. Does UBI, universal basic income, does it create a disincentive for work?
Yes. Stop and think for a minute. Why do we work? I really enjoy giving economics lectures, and I moved to Hillsdale in order to do it here. I would not have moved here if I weren't paid, even though I enjoy it. You work at the radio station. I think you're paid.
Yes, last time I checked.
Good. I always say that. I think you deserve it, but you earn it, but we work for pay. If you pay people to not work, you get less of it, and it's as simple as that. Many of the advocates of UBI will also be people who advocate increases in the minimum wage, and they claim to believe that if you raise the minimum wage and pay people more, they'll work more. Great. So if you're cutting the necessity to work and paying people to not work, you'll get less work. It seems quite obvious.
We saw during COVID, as the government handed out money to Americans, inflation surely followed. Under a universal basic income plan, could that also lead to increased demand without an increase in production, therefore an increase in inflation?
No, actually, I don't think that's the way to think about this. Inflation is really a monetary phenomenon, so unless you're increasing the money supply, it's not going to be inflationary. You would get maybe you could think of a one-time increase in prices as you probably get less work being done. The less work would probably be among the people who are not earning as much now. If I were given $1,000, it depends, of course, on the level of UBI, but if I were given $1,000, it doesn't mean that I would be working less, but for some people it would. And so it might have an effect on output. And that would tend to raise prices. But it would be kind of a one-shot deal. It wouldn't be inflation.
There are some obvious consequences that we look at. Are there some unintended ones that we should consider if we are thinking about this sort of process?
Yes. And I'm hesitant to say unintended or not. I don't know the intent of people who are pushing UBI. Won't pretend to know. The one consequence, I think, of a UBI program would be that it would begin teaching people that it is a role of government to provide an income for people. And it's not a proper role of government to provide income. Government can only do that by taking from some others. A second thing that I think would happen is that even if the UBI, if a universal basic income were set at a low level, the argument would be, well, that's not enough to live in a dignified fashion. Well, what is? And you'd have to end up raising income to the average. It's very much a redistributional system. I think that would be extremely harmful.
We'd roll back into similar arguments, I would imagine, that we hear about the minimum wage, which you mentioned earlier, which is, okay, set it here. Well, that's not enough. It needs to be a living wage. We set a low UBI. Well, that's not enough to live on. It's got to be a living UBI.
You'd very much have a ratchet effect. It would not go down. It would go up. And I think it would be... politicians would utilize this as a way to buy votes. Mm-hmm. That's why I say it may be intentional, not unintentional, but it would. That's the effect that we would see.
Talking with Dr. Charles Steele about the idea of universal basic income, the great economist Milton Friedman had the concept of a negative income tax. How is universal basic income compare, how does it compare to the idea of this negative income tax?
Well, I don't like the Friedman idea of the negative income tax either, but they are different. They can have the same effect if they're set, if they're adjusted properly. But Friedman's idea was that you would, that one would have for people below a certain income threshold that they would get, instead of paying to the government, they get a payback from the government depending upon what their income was. That's a little bit different. So it was the idea of means testing. If you were above this threshold, you would be paying income tax. If you're below it, you'd be receiving it. I think still it has those disincentive effects that are undesirable.
In the state of Alaska, there is something called the Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend. Payments go out to Alaska residents from oil revenues. Have you learned anything from that particular program that might be useful in this UBI debate?
My thinking is that that's quite a different kind of a program. That is akin to those are royalties that are paid on oil that is property of the state of Alaska. And so the residents of the state of Alaska are something along the lines of shareholders. They're just getting a share of royalties from sale of government property. So that's quite a different notion. It's also subject, of course, to the price of oil and how much oil is being pumped. So it's much closer to something like a stock dividend. And I think that's quite different from the UBI.
Dr. Charles Steele, as we talk about universal basic income, mentioned at the top, there is a recent real-world experiment study on UBI. And in the end, it shows that it encouraged people to work less and earn less. Did we learn anything new from this paper, this experiment?
I don't think so. I think it was exactly what I would expect. That's the National Bureau of Economic Research study that was done. And they found that it had that the UBI had a disincentive effect that was larger for larger payments. And this was, of course, payment to people who were on the lower income level, people simply engaged in more leisure time. It's not surprising at all.
There are various cities that are attempting programs like this. Do you anticipate that's going to be the place where we see, if we see it, it would be in smaller municipalities rather than large state or the country, at least to start?
Of course, that depends upon who is in charge in Washington, D.C. And I don't think we're going to see UBI for the next 4 years at least. I certainly hope we don't. Yes, I think you'll see it as done at the local level and particularly in blue cities.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Charles Steele, Director of the Center for Commerce and Freedom, Associate Professor of Economics, and Herman A. and Suzanne S. Detweiler, Chair in Economics at Hillsdale College, as we talk a bit about universal basic income. Dr. Steele, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott.
Up next, Daniel Golata joins us. He's an assistant professor at The Ohio State University's Salmon P. Chase Center for Civics, Culture, and Society. Also a transitional deacon in the Anglican Church in North America. We'll talk about faith making a quiet comeback. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Join me, Mark Levin, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. KCNR, your talk radio.
Donald Trump is doing something that's never been done in American history. Now, what Trump is trying to do all at once, he wants to, what I call, reindustrialize America.
Mark Levin is on the radio.
KCNR, your talk radio.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
www.mclean.edu. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. You can find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio, including YouTube. All sorts of great Hillsdale College shows, including The Larry Arn Show, Imprimis, and the Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast. Check it all out at the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. We're joined by Daniel Galata. He is assistant professor at the Ohio State University's Salmon P. Chase Center for Civics, Culture, and Society. Also a transitional deacon in the Anglican Church in North America. You can find him on X at Daniel Galata. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Also recently writing a piece at Compact Magazine, compactmag.com, Faith Makes a Quiet Comeback, a very interesting read. Why do you think we're seeing this quiet return to faith, especially among some young adults in places like both the UK and the US?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Obviously, there's not one-size-fits-all answer to why we're starting to see this quiet revival, as it's been dubbed. But some of the examples and citations that have been given is Gen Z's sense of loneliness. Like, unlike other generations where they have grown up with strong family and community, sports, religion, school, Gen Z, you know, partly because of declining birth rates, their parents being lonelier, less involved as well. There's a lot of detachment, and some of these Gen Zers are finding the community they've been looking for at church. Other people, it's meaning, the fact that Gen Z hasn't just been educated in a kind of postmodern relativism. They've actually been born into it, where everybody's truth is somewhat relative, especially growing up with the internet around them, where they're bombarded by different claims of virtue and vice and everything in between, that the fact that religions like Christianity, some forms of it anyway, make assertive truth claims is very, very powerful. And beyond that, probably the other thing is Christianity has always been on the cutting edge of technology, but I think for a while it was kind of left in the dust a little bit. The new atheists kind of had the edge when it came to the internet. Well, it seems that Christians have picked things up when it comes to social media. YouTube apologists, debates on TikTok, podcasting is huge. Mm-hmm. And then there's also media, like The Chosen being like one of the highest grossing films. And it's about it's a TV series about Jesus where being interviewed by young people have said, I just kind of clicked onto it by accident and it's got me thinking things. So obviously there's not one size fits all, but there's all sorts of things we can point to.
Yeah, you write in this piece at Compact about young people using apps and praying through apps and listening to theology podcasts. And I think you even mentioned building churches in Minecraft. So is this what a new kind of spiritual life looks like? More digital, more personal, perhaps less connected or even disconnected from a sense of organized religion?
The one pushback I would give is that many of these apps and these digital faith communities have existed for a while. It's just they're experiencing an upgrade. Some of them are. That as the technology has gotten better, the apps have gotten more sophisticated. Beyond that, though, Christian Smith has done some research into this, and so has Ryan Brandt. One of the things that's particularly striking is the people who use these podcasts and use these apps are often already quite devout. So it's like an intensification.
Okay.
What's intriguing though, is the young people who are using them are becoming quite devout. The people who are being initiated into these various faith traditions not being converted as lukewarm converts. You know, there's often a joke about, you know, the zeal of a convert. Well, that's kind of what we're seeing, where a lot of these converts just going to church on Sunday, they're downloading a Bible app. They're buying, you know, an intense Bible study from their local Barnes & Noble. They are jumping onto Reddit to debate the hypostatic union of Christ.
Daniel Galata with us. You can read his piece, compactmag.com, Faith Makes a Quiet Comeback. One thing that
stood out from the piece is this line about young churchgoers who are reporting less anxiety and reporting more hope. And that could be a pretty big deal in this age of rising mental health struggles, especially among our youth. What do you think that churches are offering that's helping from that perspective?
Studies for a long time have shown that religion, not just Christianity, but any kind of traditional religion, actually has huge mental health benefits. One of the things that a lot of the new atheists opine, or even not the new atheists, like some psychologists like Jonathan Haidt, they talk about if we could only just hack religion, get rid of the supernatural stuff, because there's so much good stuff in there. In terms of like what they're offering, again, I think there's a whole sushi train of things that are offered. For some people, it's, they're very lonely, and this offers a baked-in community. But beyond the baked-in community, one of the things that's really interesting, speaking of Jonathan Haidt, is that young people psychologically benefit from interacting with people across different ages and work-life backgrounds, races and ethnicities. And many churches, especially the ones in the UK, that have people who are in their 50s, their 60s, as well as their teenagers and 20s, and from, you could have migrants from Africa, you could have people who have lived in London their whole life, you could have international students who are just at Cambridge or Oxford visiting, and like being surrounded by that in Sunday out, has huge benefits about understanding the world around you. But beyond that, just even something really mundane as offering counsel. Mm-hmm. Just like, I know Bob, Bob, who's a mechanic, can help me with my car, or we go to church on Sunday. So just like having those networks that young people don't have growing up because of the diminishing sense of neighborhoods and communities. Beyond that as well, there's often, anxiety can be relieved about eschatology, which is one of those fancy words about, what comes next, the end of the world. If you believe, Gen Z has been raised with a sense of justice, very strong justice about, no, wrongdoers must be punished by the law. And obviously we want that. But, once you grow up, you do learn the dark truth, especially as we've seen in the media, things like the Me Too movement, for example, where men in power were able to get away abusing women for decades on end. And some people obviously have gone to their graves getting away with this. But when you have a God that says judgment is mine and that those people will pay the price in the end for their misdeeds and their sins, I think that can also speak to what Gen Z is craving with a sense of justice. And that's just one example, but there's often, you could talk about environmental work as well, that, the new heaven and the new earth, so fears of the environment. But that obviously that doesn't mean we can just like forget about it. It often couples with like the sense of, Christian ecology, where, the first human beings were gardeners. So we have to take care of God's creation. God will renew creation. It kind of works in tandem. Mm-hmm. So again, there's not a one-size-fits-all answer, but there's so many benefits.
That's Daniel Golota, author of Faith Makes a Quiet Comeback. Find it at compactmag.com. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
It was on the streets of Pinar del Rio. You remember the smell of her hair. You thought, white gardenias. You shared dinner, then coffee. Then came that beautiful aroma of the cigar. You forgot her name, but not the cigar. La Roma de Cuba, mi amor. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
No pensé que fueras.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
This is Colonel Danny Gilliam, the host of Front Lines of Freedom, the nation's largest military news and talk radio show. We address the most pressing issues facing the security of our nation, our armed forces, our veterans, and their families. Please join us every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio show.
Need help with your health insurance? We've got you covered. At Shasta Community Health Center, we offer this free service to our community. Our enrollment counselors can assist you with new applications, renewals, troubleshooting, and answering your questions about covered California plans or Medi-Cal, also known as Medicaid or Partnership Health Plan. We're here to help you make the best choice for you and your family. Call our outreach and enrollment team at 530-229-5117 to get help today. Shasta Community Health Center, because SCHC cares.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Daniel Galata, assistant professor at The Ohio State University's Salmon P. Chase Center for Civics, Culture, and Society, also author of the recent essay, Faith Makes a Quiet Comeback. Find it at compactmag.com. Daniel, we have heard for some years now about young Americans looking for the same benefits they might get from faith elsewhere, meaning friends and community and something to put their hopes and dreams in, and looking at climate change or social activism or things like that. Is there anything in particular or a reason they're not finding fulfillment in those particular areas and now perhaps returning to faith and the church?
A lot of millennials and Gen Z try to replace religion with Harry Potter or wokeness, politics, environmentalism. It's a good question. Why does it not offer the same thing? I think one answer that could be given is many of these alternatives are hyper-individualistic. Whether it's something that looks quasi-religious, like astrology, it's still very much on the individual. There is no Pope of astrology. There is no pastors in astrology or rabbis or imams. You're pretty much still on your own. And even like some of the political activism stuff, even though there is a group mentality, for a long time, there's been this emphasis on leaderless activism, where we don't want leaders. It has to be far more spontaneous and grassroots. But it turns out people actually like leaders. People actually need people to help them dictate morality and things like that. So I think the individualistic element. Beyond that as well, I also think that there is a corporatism that young people are waking up to a lot more. So the fact that there is I use the example of astrology where, the fact that there are so many companies out there willing to cash in on the vibes, as the kids say, or even, issues with like environmentalism or LGBTQ issues, that there's Pride Month and things like that. And then brands change, they change their logos to, hype up sales. And I think young people look at that. And they're just like, oh, this is just really hollow, and they're pandering to me. But then when you have a church, whether it's the Catholic Church, the Presbyterian Church, Anglican Church, or, various synagogues that don't change, they don't bend to society's whims, I think there's something like, whoa, that's interesting. Like, that's like, you're telling me that you don't participate in XYZ? I think that really also appeals to them as well.
That tone you mentioned, there are still religious nuns today, people who check that nun box. They don't necessarily have that same tone that the new atheist might have. They're not angry about things. They might just be indifferent to religion. Is that shift something else we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, this group of people is one of the hardest groups to pin down because they're so diverse in what they believe or don't believe. For listeners who don't know what we're talking about N-O-N-E's. When you're given a list by Gallup or Pew, when you're asked about your religion, you're allowed to say none. Now, some of the nuns are atheists. They do not believe in gods or gods, but they don't like the label atheist. Some people are harder to pin down. So some people, for example, they don't believe in the Christian God, but they believe in reincarnation and karma, but they wouldn't call themselves a Hindu. So how on earth would you categorize someone like that? Or even more vague, with the vibes, how do you describe somebody who doesn't go to church all that often, but believes that all paths lead to some sort of divine inclination, and they don't believe truth can be held in any one religion, but they do believe in some sort of God that transcends reality? What do they tick? They often tick none. What do you call somebody who believes in ghosts and demons, but isn't really a Jesus follower? All of this is to say is that they're a very, very hard group to define, very difficult. One of the phrases that has been developed that this, spiritual but not religious is another descriptor for many of the people who fall in the nun category.
Mm-hmm. You also wrote a follow-up piece of sorts over at World at WNG.org. A quiet revival may be a small one. How can we tell the difference between what might be some genuine trends emerging and perhaps a little too much optimism about what we're seeing?
A lot of people were emailing me about my piece at Compact, and I was very flattered at all the attention I got. And people on Twitter, because this is what we do, we are so bad, or we're baby, as the kids like to say. I think they overread what I was writing in Compact. People were focusing on the revival part, but not the quiet part. So to give an example, many people are talking about the revival, or the booming numbers we're seeing in Roman Catholic churches, especially Latin Mass Roman Catholic churches or Greek Orthodox churches. They're growing by 10% or numbers like that. But what people are not paying attention to is some of these churches had 30 people in it. So if three extra people go, that's a growth of 10%. So it's not like these churches are, you know, full per se. So that was like one of the things I really wanted to push back on, that we have to be very careful. We have to pay attention to the quiet part and the revival part. Because as other sociologists have pointed out, Gen Z is still incredibly secular, incredibly indifferent to religion. So even if we are seeing this slight uptick, it is slight. And then the million-dollar question, how long does it last? Mm-hmm. Because as I wrote in World, many of these people, you know, once they left college, for example, they dropped Christianity, or when they got to college, they never came back, despite how zealous they were in high school. So, yeah, I want to temper expectations that even if we do have a quiet revival, it probably is going to be a modest one compared to the first, second, and third, fourth Great Awakening.
What kind of signs might we want to watch for over the next 5 years, 10 years, to track and see if this is really a revival that has some stickiness to it and not just a trend or a moment that we might be talking about coming around again 15 years from now?
Yeah, good question. So here are the things I'm looking out for. First of all, just raw data. I just want to follow, I'm following, you know, if you're interested in this, Gallup and Pew, Barna Group, these groups are publishing data every once in a while. So we just have to follow the data and see what happens there. At a more obvious level, I'm really intrigued by some of the elites. Are elites still talking about this? And we can even talk about religious elites. Some of the people who have become Christian publicly as celebrities, are they still celebrities quite publicly? Is it still important to their digital public forward-facing identity? So one example I would give is a woman by the name of Nala. She was a top-earning OnlyFans model who eventually repented, got baptized, completely rejected pornography, and is now kind of rebranded herself as a Christian influencer, and she's making the podcast circuits talking about the dangers of pornography and the perils of OnlyFans, and very much with Jesus at the forefront. Is she still doing this after 5 years? People like her, that would be like an interesting indicator to me. Mm-hmm. She still might be Christian after 5 years, but is it really integral to her identity? The things like that, you know, publishing trends, things like that.
Daniel Golota, you can read his piece at compactmag.com, Faith Makes a Quiet Comeback, and a follow-up at worldwng.org, A Quiet Revival, Maybe a Small One. Daniel Golota is assistant professor at The Ohio State University's Salmon P. Chase Center for Civics, Culture, and Society. You can find him also on X at Daniel Golota. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Up next, Ben Whalen from Hillsdale's English Department returns as we conclude his series about the writings of Mark Twain. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Jack Potter Jr., Tribal Chairman for Redding Rancheria. We proudly partnered with the Redding Rodeo Association for Native American Appreciation Night. As you know, our roots and hearts are here in this community and are proud of this partnership. From grants to help local businesses and government, to making health care available to so many, to our own community events like the Stillwater Powwow that happens right here on this same land, Redding Rancheria is proud to play our part.
Now, this is Carl Bott
and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right, even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up, fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us.
This show's for educated voters, not for people that voted for Kamala Harris.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest
every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1468.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Reading Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Reading Bike Park. We just want to thank the Reading Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Reading Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Follow us on X. We're at Hillsdale Radio. You'll get updated show and guest information. And follow the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at HC Podcasts.
We're joined by Dr. Ben Whalen, Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Whalen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Continuing our conversation about Mark Twain. Last time we talked about the adventures of Tom Sawyer. This time we talk about the adventures of Huckleberry Finn. As we do, I'm reminded of a conversation I had with Dr. Todd Mack from our Spanish department here. We were talking about Don Quixote, and there's two parts of Don Quixote. There's a part one, and then a few years later, there's a part so commercially successful, a part two, a sequel. And here we have a spinoff. Is this what, this like an early spinoff? Is this one of the early examples of that?
Absolutely. This, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn owes a huge debt to Cervantes, to Don Quixote. This, Don Quixote goes and has all of these different adventures, and Huckleberry Finn does similarly. So it's, we can call it a picaresque novel because it takes this character and we see him, go through these different iterations and series of adventures. And so yes, Huckleberry Finn is a little Don Quixote in a way.
What makes Huck Finn such a relatable and enduring character in American literature?
So one of the interesting things is that Huckleberry Finn is definitely written as a sequel to The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. In The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, the narrator is third person. But in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, we suddenly, it's a first person narrator from Huckleberry Finn. So the entire time we're reading the novel, we're hearing Huck's voice. And we see him as he goes through different adventures and different moral questions. We hear his really charming, innocent, boyish voice wrestling with the adventures and wrestling with the moral questions that come up. And it's utterly charming. So just the narrative voice, Twain's conception of the character, the fact that we receive reality filtered through the eyes of this little 11-year-old, it's really lovely and charming.
I guess I want to start here because we spent our last conversation on Tom Sawyer and talked a lot about the characterization. He's a scamp, right? How would you contrast these two characters, Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn?
Yeah. So, Tom Sawyer is definitely the more civilized, if I can call it that. He's been adopted by his aunt and he lives with her. And though he gets in all sorts of adventures, Huck Finn is the wilder boy. Huck is not actually quite an orphan at the opening of the novel. His father is the town drunk and he wanders through from time to time. But so Huck actually spends his childhood living in a hogshead barrel by the edge of the Mississippi. And so he, because he doesn't have a family in any real sense, he doesn't have to go to church and he doesn't have to go to school. And so he's the envy of all the other little boys in the town, including Tom. And so he's the less civilized, the more wild in that way figure.
What are some of the main themes that we get to explore in the adventures of Huckleberry Finn?
Well, overall, what happens in the novel is that Huck, trying to get away from his drunken, abusive father, and this slave, Jim, trying to escape from being sold down the river, they get on a raft and they have this grand journey down the Mississippi River in an aim finally for Jim to find freedom. And by the end of the novel, he is freed. So overall, the novel is about a grand journey from slavery to freedom. And that's the sort of the general structure. So one of the main themes then we would think is Twain looking at slavery. And the novel is published in the 1880s, but it's set in the 1830s or 40s. So it's very interesting that the novel that is really thinking about slavery is written after the Emancipation Proclamation. There are not actual slaves in America in the 80s. And yet, of course, the problems that slavery gave rise to, problems of racism, of culture, of the problems of Reconstruction and of segregation, those are still problems for America and the time Twain is writing. And so the novel is still thinking about race, about language, and about slavery in important ways.
What kind of insight do we get from Huck Finn about the lives of the people during this time?
It's a great question. I think you see certainly some of the ugliness of racism. I think certainly you see some of the great charity that people can have towards others. You see the difficulty for the country in overcoming the racial problems even after the Civil War. But I actually brought a quote from T.S. Eliot about Huckleberry Finn that I think is worth sharing as well, because the novel is not just about slavery. That's certainly a part of it, but Eliot captures something here that I'll read it. This is T.S. Eliot. In Huckleberry Finn, Mark Twain wrote a much greater book than he could have known he was writing. Perhaps all great works of art mean much more than the author could have been aware of meaning. Certainly, Huckleberry Finn is that the one book of Mark Twain's which, as a whole, has this unconsciousness. So what seems to be the rightness of reverting at the end of the book to the mood of Tom Sawyer was perhaps unconscious art. And here's the point. For Huckleberry Finn, neither a tragic nor a happy ending would be suitable. No worldly success or social satisfaction, no domestic consummation would be worthy of him. A tragic end also would reduce him to the level of those whom we pity. Huck Finn must come from nowhere and be bound for nowhere. His is not the independence of the typical or symbolic American pioneer, but the independence of the vagabond. His existence questions the values of America as much as the values of Europe. He is as much an affront to the pioneer spirit as he is to business enterprise. He is in a state of nature as detached as the state of the saint. In a busy world, he represents the loafer. In an acquisitive and competitive world, he insists on living hand to mouth. And the quote goes on, but I think Twain captures something there, T.S. Eliot captures something there about Twain's work, which is that we get this really interesting character who questions really what lies at the heart of American culture and the American imagination. And it is related to race, but there's more to it than that. You also question being acquisitive, and you question the frontier, and you look at these different virtues and these different intense situations and see how this little innocent boy does navigate them and exhibit virtue and greatness despite his being not quite civilized.
The other conversation in which the adventures of Huckleberry Finn often appears is in the conversation about the great American novel. I've overheard these discussions among members of the English department here at Hillsdale College, and everyone has his or her own choice. So is the adventures of Huckleberry Finn the great American novel?
That's a great question. It's actually really funny, Scott, because the concept of the great American novel originated in 1868 a scholar referred to the Great American Novel, and he thought that, in fact, the Great American Novel hadn't yet been written, but that Uncle Tom's Cabin was probably the best we have. And so Huckleberry Finn is actually written after the conversation of the Great American Novel has already started. And this is a curious conversation because, after all, we don't tend to talk about other nations' literatures in the same way. So you don't, there isn't like the great British novel. There, I mean, there are too many great ones. Who would you pick? And similarly, or the German or the Russian. But I do like that the idea of the great American novel as this concept. Is there a novel that captures sort of America in all of her manifold different ways of being? And if that's what we're looking for, Huckleberry Finn, in the way that it's a picaresque novel, in the way that you see all different strata of society, all these different places, you see the America from Missouri all the way down the river, you do get something representatively American here. So I love this novel. For my money, it's right in there among the great American novels. Certainly you would think in the 19th century, you also think of Melville's Moby Dick, and that's right there as well. But these two great novels really do give us 19th century American culture in its vagaries, in its strengths and weaknesses, in its virtues and vices.
Dr. Ben Whalen is Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College. As we talk about Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, we previously talked about Tom Sawyer, previously about Twain, his life, his background, and, well, we'll likely revisit sometime in the future as well. Dr. Ben Whalen, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks so much for having me.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Charles Steele from Hillsdale College, Daniel Galata writing in CompactMag.com about faith making a quiet comeback, and Ben Whalen from Hillsdale's English Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
You remember when quality mattered more and people advertised low prices? When craftsmanship wasn't just a buzzword, but a way of life. At Cascade Curations, they never forgot. Their hand-selected collections honor that American tradition and the quality you grew up with. Quality clothing and low prices, just like they used to make them. Come see their showroom of men's and women's clothing across from Jack's Grill on California Street. And as always, they have free parking for their customers. Go by and see for yourself. Cascade Curations.
Hi there. It's a sunny reminder from Alliance Heating and Air. Thinking about going solar? Now's the time to act. The 30% federal solar tax credit may be ending December 31st, 2025. But if you install your system soon, you could still save an average of up to $12,700. Don't wait. Call Alliance Heating and Air at 530-221-2642 to lock in your savings. We make it simple. We make it smart. And that's why everybody calls us.
Everybody calls us.
Hey, Redding, save big on Black Bear Diner's new basket bundles. Get your paws on a choice of sandwich, side, and drink for only $11. A great meal at a great price. Basket Bundles, now available at Black Bear Diner. Be sure to stop by for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner just added 4 brand new and 4 returning classics to the menu. Black Bear Diner, 2205 Hilltop Drive. Get big value and so many choices at Black Bear Diner.
Black Bear Diner.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.